This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the podcast with no name. My name is Scott Allen. I'm the MC for the week. I am joined by my esteemed colleagues, Kevin Dente, Lazy Coder, a.k.a. Scott Coon, and John Galloway. And before we get started on tonight's topic, I think John had an announcement, some administration to take care of.
Yeah. Well, so as K. Scott mentioned, we don't have a name yet. We know that it's completely ridiculous at this point that we don't have a name. So we've posted a few on last week's post. I'll post some with the announcement this week. And please just give us your feedback on them, whatever. We'll do a vote. I'll post with the show. I'll post like a Survey Monkey, and we'll just pick one. So please just give us your input on that. The other thing is I started setting up the RSS feed so you can actually subscribe to it. So I started doing that with FeedBurner last week, and I'll finish that up hopefully for this week's show. That's it.
Excellent. This week, we'll be talking about Firefox 3. So this is a web browser that's come a long way, and there's a slew of new features. I'm going to turn it over to John once again to give us some of the highlights of what he likes in the new version.
Sure. Well, so two things. I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. One is as a user, and the other is as a developer. So Lifehacker has some really great coverage. They have a top three Firefox 3 features post. So one of the features there is the smart location bar, which they say it learns how you browse. So it has autocomplete for both URLs, but also for titles of pages. So that's kind of helpful. Another big thing is they've really beefed up the performance. And one other thing kind of as a user is that they've changed the way that they handle bookmarking. They've got a kind of a bookmark manager thing. The bookmark manager is now called the places organizer. There's several others. They say they've got like 14,000 features. Then on the developer side, there's a lot of new features that I think are really interesting. It's just going to, a lot of this is going to wait on seeing what's going to happen with support from IE. I'm kind of a SVG nut, and they've got support for that. They've also got support for animated PNGs, which is nice. That's kind of animated GIF 3.97 billion. And then there's also, you know, the continual CSS improvements, and they've got a lot of new support for JavaScript. They've got JavaScript 1.8 support. So I've looked at it a little bit, but it's the kind of thing where if it's not cross-browser, then we'll probably end up using it only via libraries that support all that.
So one of the other things that kind of inspired me that I saw coming was the offline support, very similar to Google Gears, that both IE8 and Firefox have. Of course, I Firefox made it to shipping first with it, if you don't count Google, but, you know, who are those guys? The idea being that you can write offline support into your web apps. You have a persistent store on the client side. That's all. I just think it's neat.
So how does that work? Have you looked into how that works from a developer point of view? Like how you actually tie into it?
No, actually, I didn't. I didn't realize that it was coming until I read about it on the What's New in Firefox page today. For some reason, I'd heard about it at some point, but I hadn't ever. There hasn't been as much noise made about it as there has been about Gears, I guess. And of course, that also brings up the next, you know, kind of elephant in the room with that is, do we now have to write, you know, two branches or three branches if we're going to provide offline support for our web apps? Or is there now an offline persistent store, you know, interface that we can program against?
That seems like similar to a lot of other JavaScript kind of things where we've got wrappers kind of like jQuery or all these libraries that then will kind of handle the incompatibilities. And I wonder if that's something, the same kind of thing where you know, Dojo and jQuery and all these guys are just going to support offline methods, and they're going to figure it out.
What do you think, Kevin?
I'm actually wasn't aware of the local storage thing either. A couple of other features that I was particularly interested in. One is kind of a catch up feature where Firefox has full page zooming now, which is something that IE7 has had for a while, where zooming in and out of a page doesn't just scale font sizes; it now scales the whole page, which is awesome. And also, it's not as big a deal for Windows users, but for Mac users, it's a bigger deal. Is that Firefox 3 provides much more of a native OS look and feel for whatever platform it's running on. So those were a couple of things that I was pretty excited about. And of course, the speed is just totally awesome. Totally blows me away as far as, you know, Ajax JavaScript performance. I was just totally, totally stunned when I loaded up Firefox 3 beta, whatever, 4. And Ajax apps like Google Reader just absolutely screamed.
Has everyone here been running the beta?
Yeah, I've been playing with that off and on since I've had it full time installed since beta 3 on my laptop.
Yeah, I've been running it from beta 4.
Yeah, I've been running. I started with beta 2, and I've been running it ever since. I had just installed RC3 like 2 days before the release date.
All right. So here's a question for everybody. I would say that there's far more plugins and third-party additions to Firefox than there is on IE, and I'm sure part of that is because Firefox is relatively simple to extend. I mean, you can just take an XML file and some JavaScript and extend Firefox, whereas Internet Explorer has all these various mechanisms to extend it. There's browser helper objects, and you can plug into the context menu, but you have to do things like make registry entries and so forth. It's just not as friendly. Do you think that Firefox has more support because it's a open source project? It sort of attracts people that want to pack things up versus IE, which is more of just a mundane Microsoft thing. What do you think, John?
Well, I think it's a lot of things. I think that it's because Firefox was built kind of from the ground up as an extendable platform, that I think that makes a huge difference. Like if you were saying that to build an extension, you need HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and you zip it and you've got an extension, and it's just so much more up to date than the COM based extension model for Internet Explorer. So I think that, you know, it's the kind of second mover or third or whatever, the last mover advantage on the extension thing, where they're able to build extensions that people actually want.
What do you think, Scott?
I think since IE6, possibly even, you know, IE4, the biggest problem that the Internet Explorer team has had has been its wild success and legacy. It's very, very hard for them to change anything right now, I think. And not to mention the tight integration with Explorer kind of makes it difficult to, you know, just throw in, you know, kind of a Azul-like environment for you to develop extensions in. Whereas the entire Chrome of Firefox, the entire browser, I believe, is all based in Azul. So, you know, the same tools that you're using to build your extensions are what they use to build the browser, basically.
So let me ask you this. What if Microsoft said, we're going to ship Internet Explorer 8.0 sometime this year, and then that's it. It's done. It's baked. We'll do bug fixes. We'll do some security patches. But after this, what we're going to do is implement some new browser based on managed code. It's going to plug into live services and the mesh or whatever, but it's going to be very extensible. It's going to be managed code. It's going to be compliant with all the standards that web developers carry about. Does anyone think that would be a good idea? Just sort of start over? John?
Yeah, I think that would be an excellent idea. I mean, I think that they've right now, like you're saying, they're just working with so much legacy that you know, if you want to see something just really, it just tears your heart out. Startup Regmon from SysInternals and Startup FileMon and then run Internet Explorer. And it's just so sad to watch this poor monster like trying to crawl. And it's just got, I mean, it just flashes by tens of thousands of registry accesses, tens of thousands of file accesses just to start this poor beast up. And so when I do that, then it just kind of makes you think like, well, of course, it's just so difficult to update this thing. I think that if they were able to build a managed browser and build it with extensibility using .NET, that they would just, I think that would be the best thing they could do right now.
Make it extensible, make it modular, make it easy to program against. You know, one of the things I don't like about IE programming and for IE, the same thing I don't like, it's some of the same reasons I don't like programming stuff for Office, is those hexadecimal COM exceptions, which don't tell you much of anything. You know, access denied. Gee, thanks. It would be great if you could get some real, if you had managed code, you could actually get meaningful error messages. That's one of the best things about .NET. Kevin, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've been a long time been a huge fan of the extension system in Firefox. I think it's probably the most compelling feature of the platform. Not just because, you know, it's easy to use and people can build cool things, but because it's kind of a great proving ground for future features of the browser. It's a great way to kind of, for people to build things and see what works, and then for the Firefox core team to say, you know, hey, that works really well, let's fold that in. And IE just doesn't have that. And it's an absolutely killer sort of development test bed. One of the big IE8 features was the activities stuff for some snazzy in browser UI stuff, and they announced that at wherever it was at Mix, and within a week or two, that feature was already on Firefox long before it ever shipped on IE. So that whole platform is just such a killer, feature for the browser. As far as starting over on IE8, I think that's a brilliant idea, or IE9, I should say. I think that would be a brilliant idea, but I don't actually think Microsoft would do it. But dare to hope, I guess.
I think it would be tough for them, but I think they could benefit a lot. Yeah. What do you think, Scott?
I disagree. I don't think that. I disagree. I don't think that starting over is going to be in their best interest. I think that they're starting to turn the battleship that is IE8, or that is IE in general. From what I've heard, they're down to two rendering trees. They're down to the old stuff, and then the going forward kind of branch in their rendering engine. I think that, you know, scrapping all that would then mean that we'd have a fifth browser if we're trying to go for a true browser compatibility to support. And, you know, God help us if we have another meta tag that says emulate IE9 or emulate IE8 in there that we have to deal with. I think that, you know, I've often heard that, you know, success is a feature. I think, not success. What is a success is a metric, but I think that not sucking should also be a feature of any browser, or any application in general. And I think that that's really where Firefox, rises above. It's not so much that IE was a bad browser. It's that it's a black box. So, you know, we can see what Firefox is doing. We know what they're doing. And I guess, you know, this would go back to the whole open source model. It's, you know, you feel more connected to Firefox than you do to IE. And that's kind of a strange place for me to be in, because I was one of those those people back in the 90s that stayed up until midnight to download IE3, the Midnight Mattis. Was anyone else up for that?
Nope.
Way back when? Somewhere I had a t-shirt that says I downloaded IE3, I think it was. But, and now, you know, IE8 is coming out in beta this August, and kind of everyone's saying, yeah, so? And yet, you know, Firefox is trying to set a Guinness World Record for downloading today.
Which is a bad idea, it turns out. They set up their own denial of service attack.
You know, on a side note, every time that some company announces, you know, everyone come to our server on this day at this time and hit it as hard as you can, you know what's going to happen. CBS, when they announced the Victoria's Secret broadcast, you know, what, two people got to see that, and they happened to be sitting at the console, I think. Twitter, anytime more than 10 people get together in a bar, pretty much goes down for the count. They can't handle that kind of traffic. And, you know, the same thing that happened in Mozilla. They just went down, down, down. But apparently, if you downloaded directly from their servers with the direct download links that started floating around, it did count. So, okay. Side topic. Moving on.
Firefox 3 had a problem for a while where Silverlight 2 kept crashing it. So I know a lot of people weren't using Firefox 3 because Silverlight 2 kept crashing it. And it's interesting to me that the fix came from, it was, if you look at the Bugzilla thread, it was really a problem on both sides from the way I read the thread. And, the Silverlight team fixed that. And I think that just kind of brings me back around to the Internet Explorer side of this, which is if the Internet Explorer team had the same kind of momentum that the Silverlight team did, I think it would be a completely different conversation, which you know goes back to a long held opinion of mine, which is please give the Internet Explorer team to Scott Guthrie and let's talk, because I think it would be a completely different conversation.
So we're talking about Firefox extensibility, and just today I was on Twitter and I asked if anyone knew how I could blacklist some sites for my Google search results, because it seems like every time I go to Google for a specific hardware problem or message, there's a couple sites that always come up that I just know they're like black holes. If I click on them, it's just going to completely waste my time. And Mr. Galloway immediately fired back with something I could plug into Firefox that would let me remove some sites from my Google search results, which, I mean, is just great. So, I know everyone has their favorite extensions, and I thought we could just go around and see what everyone's using. What about we let Kevin start this off?
Well, I have a lot of favorite extensions. and, you know, there's the obvious ones like Adblock and Flashblock and Firebug, of course, but I'll list one that I think not a lot of people probably use, which is an extension called NoSquint, which I have found to be, has become totally crucial to my web browsing experience. It gives you per site zoom settings, and, you know, remembers them across browser restarts. Now, this is actually a feature that is sort of in Firefox 3, but it doesn't, they don't quite get it in Firefox 3. Like, for example, when you have common domain bases like google.com and their subdomains on that, on google.com, well, I don't want my Google Reader font size to be the same as my Google News font size, and the Firefox Zoom stuff doesn't quite handle that. But the NoSquint extension totally nails it, and it lets you do things like set separate full zoom versus text zoom, and you can set exceptions so you can customize how the sites are recognized as distinct sites. So anyway, I can't live without it at this point. It's totally changed how I use the browser. or just because made the browser so much more useful for me, because I'm not constantly squinting and like trying to zoom in, and it's just it's fantastic in my book. That's kind of my less popular but absolutely critical extension.
So we talked, you know, Firebug, of course, is at the top of every web developer's list. But the one that I'm starting to see more use out of, well, there's two, really. My first one is the delicious.com extension, or I guess it's delicious, the online bookmarking site. The way that the extension just blends in to the Firefox UI is incredible. It puts a button up next to your address bar, and you hit it, you hit tag, it pops up the UI, you type in your tags, it does autocomplete from your tag library. It suggests popular tags that are global. It suggests tags that are in your local tag library, and you just save it right there. It's just so easy. And the second one would have to be GreaseMonkey. That is just such an inspiring plugin. I've seen it do everything from add a delete button to Gmail to completely reskin Google Reader so that it looks more like an OS X application, native, you know, kind of Chrome with that. I've seen it modify the friendfeed.com UI to allow twittering straight from friendfeed.com. There's just, you know, there's nothing you can't do with GreaseMonkey. It just allows you to extend every website that you browse to in Firefox. And I think it kind of fits in with the Firefox idea of extensibility. What's more extensible than, you know, just being able to completely rewrite the website you're viewing on the fly? It's great.
What about Mr. Galloway?
All right. So I'm going to give two quick shout-outs, and then I'll talk about one that a lot of people haven't seen probably before. So Firebug, as everyone's mentioned, is a must-have if you're doing any kind of web development. So just go to getfirebug.com. I believe they have some video there, but that's just take the time to learn that one. And then another one that's been helpful to me is the Better Gmail add-in. I think now it's called Better Gmail 2, and that's from the people at Lifehacker, and that one really kind of just makes the Gmail side a lot more usable. But the one I wanted to dig into that I don't know many people that use is called Scrapbook. And Scrapbook is great because it lets you select a page or text on a page and scrapbook it. And what that does is it screen scrapes the page, images and text, and saves it locally. And so it doesn't matter if that page goes offline, it doesn't matter, whatever, you've kind of grabbed it. And then you're able to tag it, you're able to annotate the page. It has really good support for searching, etc. I've got that set up with folder share, and so I'll tag something or mark it on my work computer and say, I'll get to this later. And then later I pop it up on my laptop and there it is. So it's kind of the solution for my old problem, which was opening up a lot of browser tabs and just leaving them open because bookmarks are a black hole. I never go back to them. And too many tabs open is not good for anybody. It just slows your machine down. So I've just been really happy with the Scrapbook plugin. So it was stalled for a little while, and then I've seen some kind of more regular updates since Firefox 3 was kind of revving up.
All right, and one I use, I love Firebug for JavaScript debugging also, and everything else that it does. But something else that's related to JavaScript that I have installed is called the JavaScript Shell, and that's from www.squarefree.com. And this is just a bookmarklet that you can install. Click on the button, it'll open up a separate window where you can interactively type some JavaScript and work against the DOM. It has some nice shortcuts, like if you type props, props, and then pass an object to it, it'll basically dump the object for you. This is something that, I mean, that's not revolutionary. You can do that with the Visual Studio Debugger, for instance. But there's something about this that a lot of times it's just so quick and easy and accessible to just pop open and try it out that it's pretty good. We're going to wrap up this week's edition of the podcast. We hope you enjoyed this and tune in next week. Peace out.